You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. I'm the captain of this vessel. It's the Fantastic Voyage, continuing on. Joined by my first mate, Chris Johnson. I'm Marcus Johnson, Here District. And man, we are so privileged and honored to have an international celebrity, an international Absolutely. Celebrity within our midst. She used to work for the Bucks way back when. I don't know if she even remembers that or even acknowledges that anymore. But Dora Stevenson, Z, what's up? Welcome to Here District.
Yo, once a Bucks fan, always. I got my you see what my background is? Okay, just for you all. This is an everyday thing.
So you didn't set that up? That cubicle wasn't designed and orchestrated specifically for this show, then? Is that what you're telling me?
No. People know I'm a Bucks, and now I'm a fan. I can just be a fan now, which has been actually really fun.
Well, you know, we're all big fans of yours, and we miss you in Milwaukee. Let me start off by saying that. And do you miss us? Do you miss Milwaukee? What do you miss about Milwaukee?
I miss everything. The other day I was just reminiscing. I live in North Carolina now, but when we were in Milwaukee, we lived downtown. And I miss just my strolls, right? Like, I would walk downtown, and I had go to coffee shops and dinner places and different workout classes I did. I miss the community. I miss going to Bucks games and working Bucks games. Because last season, you know, we still lived in Milwaukee, so I would go to Bucks games as a fan. But I miss walking into Pfizer Forum, you know, hours before and going to, like, you know, just working. It's the people. Yeah. It's an amazing fan base. I miss, you know, Marcus, I miss watching practices.
Right.
Because, you know, I think it's so amazing that you all get to watch practice, and like the basketball nerd in me just gets to try to figure out what's going on, and then we would rap back and forth. You know, I miss those interactions.
Wait, is it different in the W? You say, do you get to watch practices? Same kind of access? Okay.
Yeah, same kind of access. You get to watch practices. But because I'm, you know, kind of in and out, I'm watching more shoot-arounds. And with the W, they don't really get to practice a lot because the schedule's so condensed. They're just not as many practices, it's more shoot-arounds.
I love we sit in the practice facility up on our little perch above the practice floor, and you know, it was just the interaction that we had, and the road trips that we had, and again, just you know, it was just a lot of fun working with you. But I knew, Zora, I knew Chris, I knew this as sure as we're sitting here, I knew we wouldn't have her for long. I knew that this was just an intermediate stop, you know, along the ascension to greatness, because she was just, let me tell you a funny story. You see, Zora's won Emmy Award, but she's got several. But after I'd won a couple, I think I went to Zora. I was like, you know, if you continue working like you're working, you know, you got to win an Emmy one day. She's like, well, I won 5 in Denver. I was like, oh, buddy. Well, I got 5. Buddy. I won five in Denver. I was like, oh, okay. My bad. But if, let's talk about the Olympics first, the Paris. This is your second time in 5 years or so, 4 or 5 years, going over there with the Bucks when we played Charlotte. Was that the COVID year? Right before COVID, right?
Yeah, it was right before. That trip was so fun, by the way. That's still like one of my top. Just one, like the way we get to travel, right?
We had the huge, gigantic plane, Chris. We had the biggest plane. That plane was like $300,000, you know, an hour or something to fly.
Yeah.
It was the biggest plane you've ever seen. You've seen the big Howard Hughes monstrosity that you see. It's bigger than that. It was just a huge, but every amenity that you could, I mean, it was off the hook. It was off the chain. But this trip, talk about this Olympics trip. First of all, I mean, not so much the sports, but did you have a good time? You have a chance to enjoy yourself, or was it all pretty much all work?
No. I got out, and I actually got to go to some other events too. Like, I was in the building for the 100-meter. Race men's when Noah Lyles won. I was there. My husband, Kevin, he was there for most of the time too. So we got to explore. We ate a lot and tried a lot of different restaurants, and also had some friends and family there. So there was pocket, you know, just like when we work, right? There's pockets that you can have to explore city. And thankfully, I've already been to Paris. So I've done like the big things. So it was more so going into neighborhoods that locals were in. So it was amazing from a personal standpoint, but professionally, my goodness, I can't believe I was in the room for some of the greatness that I saw in person. And Marcus, we've seen some hoops greatness, Giannis, witnessing what Giannis does. But LeBron James and Steph Curry. And on the women's side, you got Asia Wilson and what Pooja Kapur did in the gold medal game. It was just amazing. Like, as a hoop junkie. Yeah.
But getting back to Giannis, did you get a chance to see him play?
No, because I was doing gymnastics for the first 10 days. So when basketball was in group play in Lille, which was 2 hours away from Paris, okay, I was in Paris doing gymnastics. Okay. And then once it got to the knockout round, that's when I switched to basketball. Greece had one game Paris. But no, I did hear some of the Bucks folks were over there, Peter, and was John and Doc there, I believe. And I think they were in Lille, which was like 2 hours away. But I watched his games on TV. And I mean, vintage Giannis in terms of putting the team on his back. And I'll never forget, even when Greece qualified, right? The picture of him with his son and that's Giannis, right? He shows his emotion, representing his country means so much to him. And I'm really glad that they got to be on that stage and they got to the knockout round, right? Well, so the next step is getting even farther.
And you got to know him well. How many years were you in Milwaukee? Three?
Four
years in Milwaukee. Okay. So you got to know him well at a really, really interesting point in his development and ascension into superstardom. There was a lot of blowback here about him participating in the Olympics after the injuries and having to sit out the first round of the playoffs. I mean, your thoughts on that, just in terms of what you know of Giannis. I want to hear your perspective from Giannis and knowing him the time that you've known him.
Yeah, I mean, if you know Giannis, you know it was a no-brainer that he would want to represent Greece in the Olympics if he had the opportunity and if he was healthy, you know? And it's an and situation. I understand where people are coming from. Specifically, like, it's been a couple playoff appearances in a row where injuries have been the headline. So I get it. And he's accomplished so much in his career, but he hasn't been to the Olympics. And this is something that means a lot to him. And when it comes to family and loyalty, right? And Greece is part of that for him. And so you're not going to, I wasn't surprised. Yeah. I was really happy for him. And he's, the whole crew, all the people that helped take care of Giannis's body were readily available.
Right.
I keep up enough, Marcus, to know, a little bit what's still going on a little bit.
The personal masseuse and the chef and everybody.
They were all there.
A part of the traveling party. Okay,
they were all there. Yeah. So he just, Bucks fans, rest assured that he's got what he needs to take care of his body.
Zora, I was curious about something. I'm all about vibes and the atmosphere when it comes to these high-level sporting events that you've been to. How do you compare the Bucks championship to the being in the building for Team USA winning the gold?
Good question. Good question.
Great question. I for me personally, two separate experiences, because the Bucks is like personal to me. I was entrenched, when you work for a team, I want to be very clear, I did not win a championship. I did nothing on the court to contribute, but you get to know the faces behind all of it in a different way. And we'd be lying if we didn't say we root for them, right? Because when you get to know, it's just human nature. And so I'll never forget when the Bucks won, it was like a where were you, moment. I was in fire support. I was right underneath the hoop and Bango and I were standing right next to each other when the buzzer went off and, PJ mm-hmm. Tucker falls to the floor and Giannis goes and sits. And I have the entire scene still in my head. It was, and I was.
Did you bust a tear? Did you cry? Did you shed a tear at all during that moment?
I might have. What's crazy, Marcus, is when I first got the Bucks job, I wrote down, and this is just me like affirming things and looking ahead. Yeah. I wrote down questions that I could possibly ask if the Bucks won a championship during my time there. Okay. I wrote that down as soon as I got the job in 2019, and so for me to actually
Did you use those questions? I used
a couple of them.
What can you recollect?
Yeah, I keep every, I keep notes of everything.
Wow, people organized.
People know, they can go and they can say, what are you going to say on December 3rd? And I've got it in my notes here.
I'll pull it right up for you. Hold on a second.
Yeah. And it was essentially, for Giannis, it was about the journey.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to ask him. It's like, you're a little kid growing up in Sepulveda and this is your wildest dreams. what do you make of this moment? So it was just making sure that I added some depth to the questions that I asked. And I knew it would be after they had had, you know, the whole media gamut. So yeah, I was emotional, Marcus. I know it was even deeper for you having competed. So then, you know, being at the Olympics, it was more of like the fandom of like what these players are doing is wild. And like Steph Curry's last three, it was when somebody's hot like that, I knew as soon as it left his hands, it was going in. It was a wild shot. You know, any coach would say that was probably a bad shot. And I knew I could just feel the energy. And then it being against France, like, I don't think I've ever been in an arena with that much energy, with choreographed cheers, with a, you know, a drum line.
How the Europeans do it. Okay. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And I had no idea what they were saying, but I could feel it, you know. It was so just two different experiences. One was personal and one was more so excitement. Yeah. Like, in, you know, being at the Olympics, it was excitement and giddiness that I was being able to watch this in person. And then you got to like toil that, right? You're excited, but then you're like, okay, in 2 minutes, they're going to be right next to me and I'm going to be able to ask them, you know, informed questions. And these guys, you're talking about the Stephs, LeBrons, one, I don't know them the same way that, you know, when Giannis walks up to me or Chris Middleton walks up to me, I feel like, you know, and I'm very intentional with my questions, but like Chris Middleton, if I just put the mic in his face, he respects me enough, he would just start talking. It's just different, right? Where I don't know LeBron. And so I have to make sure that my questions are something that he will stay locked in on and present with. So it was just a different challenge.
Now, in your production meetings, was there any discussion of like the Jason Tatum situation? Did you feel it? Chris talked about vibes. Just whatever you can share with us from the vibes, the conversation, the production's approach to kind of dealing with a situation like that. You don't want it to become a distraction, obviously.
Yeah, well, you go to practice. So I got the chance to go to USA basketball practice, and like majority of the questions were about that and the starting lineup. So, you know me, I'm trying to take another route to it. And I asked Steve Kerr, okay, what goes into your lineup choices? Instead of just saying, why aren't you playing Jason Tatum? It's like, what goes into the decisions that you're making with the lineup? And even when he was asked directly about Jason Tatum, he kind of deferred to combinations and stuff like that. And that's how we approached it in our production meeting. The same thing, like play-by-play would say the fact of, you know, Jason Tatum is not playing. And then I would give my excerpt on what Steve Kerr said about his lineup decisions. And what was an interesting part of our dynamic is Dwayne Wade is the analyst, and he's still very much connected to all these players. You know, it's different when you're years removed like you versus someone who, you know, just got done playing, and those are his friends. And so he was very intentional on how he handled, you know, playing time or how someone was, you know, doing or, you know, simulating whatever it may be. He was careful on it for Pete.
Yeah. And that's the one thing that I miss with you. And look, our sideline reporter, Melanie Ricks, does an outstanding job. I really, really love her work. And, but you as one who played at Elon University, I just heard that you've been bumped down to second in terms of all time.
What? Yes, that was like my one thing to say.
All time.
What's up with that?
You're not the all time leading 3-point shooter. You've been bumped down a notch, but second is still pretty good. But your experience as a former player has always been something for me that made you kind of stand out from the rest. And Chris, we'd have these production meetings, and Zora was always so self-effacing in terms of how she would approach it. She would say, well, you know, I've got this one story about Giannis and the journey from Athens and pushing a refrigerator down the street. Or we could do the story about, the Brooke Lopez and where he gets his pedicure. I don't know. You guys tell me what you want. It was like, okay, come on. Really? Is this the choice you're giving me? But in terms of just relating to the guys, I mean, just Anthony Edwards, Kevin Durant, LeBron James. I mean, was that a different experience than the normal, or how different than the normal? I know it was different, but how different was that than the normal experience?
Yeah. Well, first off, it's different just in the how much I know the guys, right? Like I don't the same way that I, you know, knew all the Bucks players, but watching, I got to watch practice, like a full practice. And this is one thing that amazed me when I first got to the Bucks in the NBA. Like, these are the best players in the world, and their first drill, Steve Kerr is saying, 3-man weave, right? And then to 2-on-1, fast break. Yeah, and this is what you got to, like, hammer down into the youth, that the fundamentals are still being done at the highest level. And then the leadership of LeBron. I was really impressed with that. I did a hit on it just by the fact that, like, this is LeBron James, right? Like, he could just show up. He doesn't have to be present. And, you know, they were making sure that Joel Embiid felt, you know, connected, especially considering every time he stepped on the floor, he was booed. They just, you know, Anthony Edwards, he was directing him to where he should have been in the scout. Like, it was, you know, I was just really impressed with how he led that team, vocally as well as with his play.
One more thing on the Olympics, Zora. You said you got to see a lot of the events and outside of the basketball stuff. Me personally watching it, I was enamored at all the track and field stuff. I mean, we saw some true, like, moments. Grant Fisher, the long distance runner, winning the finishing bronze in the 5,000 and 10,000. The kicks at the end. Remember the relay team, the 400? Of all the events that you saw, what stood out the most? What was most special in Paris?
Well, I got, you know, a front row seat to the comeback of Simone Biles. And that was amazing because I've been able to cover her the past few years and to see it all culminate in her winning the team gold, but the all around, you know, in events that she had to reface demons, you know, like the same apparatuses that she couldn't perform in, you know, 3 years ago in Tokyo, she came back and did it even better. And you know, so knowing the background to that, I'm just amazed. And gymnastics, it's so, like, for us scoopers, it's so wild to wrap my head around because they train for 4 years. Like, nobody's paying attention to them, right, like, afterwards, right, between the Olympics. So they're training for 4 years in the dark, so to speak, right? And then they have to come out, and you've got 30 seconds, 90 seconds to show what you've done. Like, it's not like basketball where you miss a shot or you have a bad first quarter, you can come back second half and redeem yourself. Like, no, it's just so the mental focus that you have to have in those moments is really inspiring and motivating. And track, I had never been to a track meet before. And the atmosphere in there, they get hype. I mean, there, oh, yeah. You know, oh, it yeah. was the DJ and all of us, as you walk into the arena, they have wristbands so that it lights up at a certain time. I mean, the atmosphere was really fun. And, you know, it's not like you can see the race really good. It's actually better to see it on TV because just like everyone on TV, we had to wait and watch it on monitor. I couldn't tell you who had won in the moment because it was so close. But just the atmosphere and then all around Paris. Paris did a tremendous job. Just the fact that we could get on the metro and go anywhere, like, it was just accessible to see different events and different, just the vibe of the city was really good.
One last thing on the gymnastics, Zora. Were you in the building for the Jordan Chiles situation where she
yes.
received? Okay, let me ask you this. Now, I heard some things about there was supposed to be, you know, a certain amount of time before you can challenge, like a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
When she's a UCLA gymnast, so this is kind of personal.
Okay. Yeah,
Yes, go Bruins. So my question was, when you were in the building for that, did you witness any of this event or what is your recollection of that situation?
Yeah. So it was the floor finals, right? So in gymnastics, you get medals for single events. It was the floor. And it was a really big deal for Jordan because it was her one shot to get an individual medal. She goes last and the scores, it's like they do a drum roll. Like the scores come in and she wasn't in the top three. Okay. When the first scores come in. And then next thing we know, producer in my ear, like they changed the score. So we didn't know that there was an inquiry that went in. Okay. You know, it's like, imagine like a silent challenge that they don't say over the big screen, like an inquiry has been submitted. They did it on the side and they changed the scores. And then we figured out that an inquiry had been submitted. So it wasn't at a point where I could time, but basically the rule is after Jordan received her score, her coach had a minute to put in the inquiry. The argument is that it was a minute and 4 seconds, but here's the thing. They changed the score right then and there. And they handed her the bronze. She was on the podium. I mean, the only analogy to me for us basketball people is imagine if a referee makes, you know, a call and a team wins the game. And then a week later you say, well, that was the wrong call. We're switching who won. You don't do that. You just have, you have a report that says the referee messed up and then everybody's mad that the referee messed up. But you can't go back and change it. And that's the thing. Like, even if we wanted to get down to the nitty gritty and her coach didn't put it in on time, they changed the score. They gave her the bronze. And this is a week later that they wanted to go back and strip her of her. It's unprecedented. It doesn't happen. And I really feel for her because she's a phenomenal human being. She's been through a lot. And she earned that medal. and there was no reason it should have been taken away. Crazy situation.
And speaking of having gone through a lot, I mean, so with these young ladies, these gymnasts, and I know, you know, this wasn't your first rodeo. You've been around gymnasts before, but I'm just wondering about how they are with the media. It seems like maybe this is my mind thinking, because they don't get the mega media attention that the NFL, the NBA, that they would be a little bit more receptive, or did you have to make sure that you didn't say twisty around Simone Biles the whole time? I mean, were there certain things that you had to really be careful with?
No, this is so it was fascinating in gymnastics. The women are the stars. They get media attention. I mean, Simone Biles is, hammered for media requests all day, every day. So her thought process, I mean, she's Giannis, you know, in terms of in how she deals with the media, and she picks and chooses what she wants to do. Whereas the men in gymnastics, they're the ones that are, you know, any interview, anytime you want to talk to them, they'll do it.
That's
the, you know, landscape in gymnastics. Yeah. Okay. So, for example,
the men are thirsty for publicity.
They're
publicity thirst. Okay.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah. The women, they don't need us, you know, they can tell their story.
But go ahead. What's the story you got to tell? I'm sorry.
Oh, well, okay. So after the qualifications, the women had said that they weren't going to talk. They did not talk after qualifications, and that they were only going to talk when everyone won a medal. And so, of course, you know, TV producers like Zora, you need to ask them if they still want to talk. And of course, knowing me, I'm like, well, I want to approach it like in a different way. And I got blown off by Simone Biles, and she walked past me, and I said, Simone, hey, good job. You know, and you're just trying to be, you know, read the room, right? Hey, good job today. I asked her if she wanted a pin. My thought process was, maybe Jane, pins at the Olympics are this whole big thing. Let me exchange a pin and then maybe see if she wants to do an interview. She looked at my pin. It was like my NBC pin. She looked at it, was like, we're good. And
walking. Wow. Okay.
So I had, you know, you're humbled at every situation, right? It's not the first time somebody said, like, told me no, but that just speaks to, I mean, these people are superstars, and you respect it. And I move on, and I'm going to still keep asking, you know, if you'll chat, because that's what we do.
You miss every shot you don't take. So
you gotta ask. Yeah,
please. Gotta ask. Well, speaking of shots you don't take, let's move it stateside to the Brooklyn Borough. I mean, you're working with the New York Liberty. Man, is this the, I don't want to say golden age, but what a time to be working women's basketball right now, right? I mean, it's got to be great.
Between college and the pros, and there's, I don't know if you've heard of Unrivaled. It's a new 3-on-3 league that's going to be starting in the winter. Yep. I have so many thoughts, because half of me is like, it's a long time coming, like, welcome to the party, you know, type thing. Like, the game has been amazing. The game has been exciting. But also, you celebrate the fact that everyone is catching on. I'll never forget. I called the Caitlin Clark game where she passed Kelsey Plum for the all-time leading scorer in women's college basketball, and that arena. I still have the confetti in my backpack. Like, there's all these moments, right, in a career that'll always stick with you. That's one of them. And Brooklyn, the New York Liberty, I mean, it's sold out, Marcus. Wow. It's more packed for a Liberty game than when you're going to go this winter for a Nets game. Guarantee you. I mean, most of their home games are sold out. The mascot, Ellie, is like world renowned. I mean, she's getting brought up on like stage with Sierra and all this kind of stuff.
Legend.
I mean, Ellie is her own brand. And just the in-game entertainment that they have, and obviously on the court too. I mean, you talk about players like Brianna Stewart, Sabrina Ionescu, Courtney Vandersloot, Jonquil Jones. That's just in the starting lineup. Doesn't even talk about some of the other puzzle pieces. It's a great brand of basketball. You've got a WNBA championship coach of Sandy Brondello that won in Phoenix. She also coached the Australian team in the Olympics. Just, you know, there's so many different storylines, and it's all clicking. This is only their second year together. Their first year, they made it to the finals, and they had to go up against the gauntlet of the Aces. And now they're running, you know, through the league. Now it's just like in the NBA, it's like, all right, regular season is great, but it's different in the playoffs. So you just hope the train keeps rolling.
And look, and just, you know, and I got to be totally transparent. I mean, I've been hearing about Brianna Stewart for years, you know, from UConn days, and just how great this is my first year of really watching her play. And it's just hard for me to believe, first of all, she's 6'4 and moves as fluently and does some of the things. And then she's got a legitimate kind of a jumper. She gets up off the ground and gets that thing off. I mean, just in terms of, I mean, you've watched Giannis, one of the greatest in the world to play. Now you get a chance to be up close and personal with Stewie. I mean, what's that like?
Yeah, well, first off, great human being, kind and generous with her time. You talk about like her release point. I mean, her release is really high, and I was asking her about that. And each year, she almost tries to fix it to get it higher, because the higher you get it, obviously the defense can't get to you. I mean, you know, she can get her shot off at will. It's, you know, and the fluidity in her game, because she's not really fast or super quick, right? But she knows how to get to her spot. She can pull up, get to the rim from behind the arc. It's, you know, it's amazing to see. It's hard to stop her. It's one of those things. You put a guard on her, will she shoot over a guard? You put a post on her, she goes by post. She's a matchup nightmare. And then you got so many pieces around her. I mean, one of the things this year is to start the season, because, you know, Breanna Stewart was the MVP of the WNBA last year. And so to start the season, it was all about her, and everybody, like, all the scout was on her. But then you're leaving, you know, all-stars like Sabrina Ionescu open, who, you know, can do it, you know, herself as well. So they just got so many weapons. It's fun. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's some other great teams in the league right now. I know, obviously, everybody knows about the Aces. They're like the rock band.
The Sun are playing well. Liberty, I think, are
and the Minnesota Lynx are a sleeper team.
That's what I meant. They've won a bunch of games in a row.
Which brings me to this question for you, Zora. Now you laid it out. Who do you think, if everything plays out, should be the MVP? You have Asia, you have Fee, you have Stewie, you have a lot of candidates. Who are you going with?
I work for the Liberty, and I think it's unanimous. And I say I work for Liberty because my choice is not anyone that plays for Liberty. I think it's unanimous for Asia Wilson and what she's been able to do this season, specifically with the injuries in Vegas, and the numbers she's putting up are just insane. I mean, she could rival for kind of like a double dose MVP and defensive player. I mean, she's playing that good. She's her mid-range. I mean, she's been able to score at will. Becky Hammon is really, I mean, the three is not there yet to me, but Becky Hammon is trying to develop it. But yeah, she's to me, it should be no question, Asia Wilson.
Well, she's got that tricky, and I've been trying to think of what male player she kind of reminded me of, but kind of a Julius Randle lefty kind of, but just real tricky jab, jumper, mid-range, you know, and Julius give you 23 to 25 a game. I mean, you could pencil it in with Asia Wilson. Really love watching her play. And but Rookie of the Year. Now, so now, are you – who? Angel, Caitlin, Cole, you know. Let me give you guys a quick story. I was a voter for the NBA – awards for a few years, myself and Kevin Calabro with the Seattle Sonics. There was one year when I got a call, Chris, from somebody in the media department of the NBA, and they asked me to change my vote because the vote was so close they wanted to make it a co-rookie of the year award between Stevie Francis and Elton Brand. So I said, I'm fine with that. So they wound up changing two or three votes and made it co-rookie of the year. But who do you like at this point? Is it just Caitlin, just a cut above the rest, so much so that it's got to be her?
So if you would have asked me this question 2 weeks before the Olympic break, I would have said Angel Reese has the slight nod, especially when she was, you know, double doubles over and over and over and over again. Yeah. Right. At this moment, if the vote is today, I'd say Caitlin, just how she has consistently improved her game for this league, figured out the coverages. We need to come in as a rookie and lead the league in assists. And Angel is leading in rebounds, but Caitlin is scoring. She's facilitating. She's also a solid. I mean, you can count her for about 5 boards a game.
Yeah.
And her field goal percentage is higher than Angel's, and she shoots farther than Angel is shooting. You look at the numbers right now. It is Caitlin Clark for Rookie of the Year.
I'll say this, Zora. Like I'm a big CC fan. I was sort of an Angel kind of, like, you know, let me wait and see. I kind of doubted Angel. As they came out of this break and the things that Angel has continued to do with such ease, me as a major CC guy, I'm like, look, this vote is not about to be unanimous, because me, what the 20 rebounds, 19 points, yeah. but the consistency of high end double doubles, not like, you know, 10 and 10. I mean, 14 and 16. I mean, she is really out here night in, night out, and she's defending. She's playing with an inner. She plays with that energy that you just can't teach. She's really grown on me. I'm just like, I'm just enamored and wild every time she steps out on the floor. So that's my two cents on
it. No, and I respect, like, both are, it's hard. It all comes down to what makes the difference for you, right? Because either of them are, for me right now, I'm looking, because it's so close, I've got to look at field goal percentages.
Yeah.
Because you look at assists and rebounds, let's just say assists and rebounds cancel each other out because they're leading the league in both those categories. So I got to look at field goal percentages, and then I have to look at the team. And right now, the Chicago Sky have not been doing as well as the Indiana Fever. Starting. I mean, if the Indiana Fever make the playoffs, they haven't made the playoffs in years. So, you know, you got to add those things into it as well. That's just, you know, how I'm going into it. But it's and what a pleasure that we have this argument. I think this conversation, this dialogue is so great for the. This is what I've always said. Like, for women's basketball, we need, you know, back and forth. We need a little discourse, because that's what gets fans going. It's good
conversation. And I can even appreciate the fact that Gabby Williams from France had the great game against the U.S. And there were some complaints about the money and all that. And that's why she's not playing. And now she's just signed, I think, recently with the Storm, right? She's
correct.
She's back in the W. Jeez. So, you know, that to me just even enhances just the whole deal of the league even Absolutely. More so.
I agree. It's a great time for women's basketball. You got to get yourself to a Sparks game, Marcus.
Sparks are terrible this year. Come on. See.
No, it's fun. It's fun.
Sparks is fun.
They got Rekia Jackson. Okay, they got Rekia Jackson. Okay, she's worth the price of admission. Don't do that.
Well, it's funny you mention that because Shiloh, my daughter Shiloh, that Zora worked with Chris. Zora worked with Shiloh when she's about nine years old on her shooting.
Okay.
And I'll send the still photos I have so we can post those. But Zora worked with Shiloh. But Zora, Shiloh actually played in the Junior Sparks tournament, played the championship at Staples Center, whatever they call it now. But she was on the Sparks floor. I think the Minnesota Lynx were just leaving from a shoot around when before their game, and they won the championship. So she's a big time Sparks fan, and I was just kind of, you know, being a little silly with the whole deal. But before we let you go, we appreciate you so much for being here. Look, I've got to.
Okay, let's go.
I've got to flash this. Okay, so what you may not know. Now, my first question, is this you on the cover of this book?
No, I'm not on the cover.
That's not you at the top. Okay, I just noticed this picture of this lady at the top. You know, But this is a book called The Beat, Go-Go Music from Washington, D.C. The Beat. And it's written Kip Lornell and Charles C. Stevenson. If the name sounds familiar, that's Dora's father. And he is one of the foremost authorities on and I bring this up because I was in – there's a group called the Cosmopolitan Club in D.C., and they're a recovery-based group that I plug into their meetings on a regular basis. But one guy was sharing. He was talking about coming to D.C. years and years ago, back in the 80s, and he said, I saw all these pretty women. I heard that go-go music, and I just had to make D.C. my home. And I thought about your dad. How's your dad doing? And just talk about his relationship and how that happened, that he became the authority on go-go music that he's become.
Oh, well, you see my smile because my dad and I are really close. I live in North Carolina now, and I live 30 minutes from my parents. And just like, you know, we had lunch today, just to be able to do stuff like that is really special to me. Yeah. So glad that we're here. They're doing great, both my parents. And my dad is actually a New York native. And when he graduated from high school, he went right into the service. And then he went to the service and he realized there was so much wrong with this country. And so he became energized politically. And so that's why he moved to Washington, D.C. He just wanted to try to make our country better. And so he got involved in politics. He was a legislative director for a congressman, Ron Dellums, out of Oakland, California, for decades. And then in his apartment that he was living at, he would hear these teenagers playing music. They knocked on his door and said, hey, we need a manager. We need some help. They were teenagers at the time. Those teenagers were Sugar Bear and EU, the band that plays doing the butt that's how he got involved with Go-Go. They just happened to be on the same floor of the apartment he was living in. And from then on, the music has just been a part of my life, a part of his life. It's really important to us. It's about music, yes, but it's about us our people. He wrote a book. He's doing another one too.
Has he ever lectured or been a? He seems like he's an authority enough where he can actually teach a course on this on Go-Go.
Yeah, he should. He should. Yeah. So there is an organization called Teach the Beat, where they're trying to get, and they've successfully gotten Go-Go as a part of the curriculum in DC. Okay. And so he's gone in and gone into multiple schools and done that. But I think it could be even college courses, right?
No, seriously.
So it's fascinating. Yeah. But fascinating. Thanks for bringing that up.
Well, listen, sir, we're so, again, just delighted to have you. Good seeing you again. Good, just watching you do all the great things that you do. And I knew it was going to happen. She got her first. You're doing play by play. Have you done some play by play with the W?
Yeah, I do play by play all winter. So for women's college basketball on NBC, I'm play by play, which is
Big
really
Ten,
cool.
Big Ten, right? Big Ten.
Yep, exactly. Yep, Big Ten.
My Bruins.
Well deserved, because she got her first start play by play. Was that your first time when we did it together in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I had done it one other time. But that was my first, obviously my first NBA game. So that was, that was really special to me. And seriously, I just want to give Marcus his flowers and his props. It was an honor to work alongside you. I always say, if Marcus and I were ever working together, it was new school and old school, and I would always make sure, he would try to get me with some references, but he got the wrong one. I was raised by some OGs, and
she's good. I'm telling you, she's really, really good. She's really good.
His references, something I pick up on him. So, I'm a big fan. And I'm still a Bucks fan. I still listen to you all. I got league pass. I can tap in and, I'll show up at a Bucks game here and there.
What are the Bucks going to do this year? Give me your prediction. What are you feeling going into this season? I know.
It's a clean slate, right? Like, it was almost unfair to have too much judgment because you don't really know what this group can do, given coach coming in halfway through. So Doc can start with a clean slate. Giannis hopefully healthy. Chris hopefully in a position where he can kind of bang a little bit more. And then Dame has been talking about the fact that, he's able to work out in this offseason, something that he didn't do. And he almost feels like, he's got a chip. He doesn't feel like he's getting respect he deserves. So anytime a player has that, it elevates a little bit more.
So I'm curious. So when you're around Drew Holiday, was there any semblance of was any vibe of see what y'all missed out on this year? Was anything like that going on with Drew? I know he's a classy guy.
I actually saw him and those are two amazing people. So great to see them. And you would think he's going to have, some sly remarks. And he really, of course, he's getting a lot of questions about, the Celtics experience in terms of winning a championship versus the Bucks. And it was two different time periods, obviously, COVID and all that. But he did say the Bucks had that emotional standpoint and, the relationships that, he really had with his teammates. And anybody who goes to Milwaukee just knows the way that they take care of the players is just different in Milwaukee. And the treatment that you get. It's working out just fine for Mr. Holiday.
And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Let me just say that.
He gives back
so much. He's a first class individual all the way, he and his family. And I'm just really, really, really elated for him. But I hope we get our chance again next year also. But Zora, not going to keep you any longer. We appreciate you so much for stopping by here, District. And we'll be checking you out on a constant basis because you're all over the place big time in NBC right now. But I'm so happy for you. Zora Stevenson, we thank you for stopping by. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bucks fan for life. In six, baby.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.